What I wanted to speak about tonight is certain interesting ideas about, in terms of, especially we see from the Chumash, and how in many ways they affect what is happening in general, and in terms of a pre-Messianic age, and so on, you know. We know that Avraham Avinu, he's 75 years old, and the Rebbeinu Shem appears to him, and he says to him, of course, Lech Lecho, then go out from, you know, where you are. He was in Choron, to go out and to a land that I will show you. So essentially what the Rebbeinu Shem was now doing, appointing him or designating him to do the Tikkun, which is a really very important concept. So Avraham Avinu was now going to have a unique status. And that is to do the tikkun, the rectification, which means to bring the Rebbeinu Shlom through different behaviors and actions back into the universe, back into the Bria. And of course, that ultimately will be the Messianic era, the Yemes HaMashiach. So Avraham Avinu, of course, accepted, and he left Choron. And he went to Eretz Yisrael. But what's interesting is he gets to Eretz Yisrael, and the Rebbeinu Shem, of course, promised him that, you know, you're going to go to a land that's going to be a tremendous place, and the Klal Yisrael, Jewish people, will have it. And of course, he gets to Eretz Yisrael, and he finds that there's one of the worst famines in world history. Obviously, he can't stay there. He can't stay in a place that there's no food. So what he then does, of course, is goes to Egypt. But he's very much aware of what Egypt is. Egypt is a tremendous immoral place. Tremendous what's called Makom Tuma. So he goes to Mitzrayim, but he realizes that his wife, Sarah, is a very beautiful woman. And he knows what the Egyptians will do. And he knows that they're going to ask him, well, who are you and who is she? And of course, if he says that she's my wife, in other words, I'm her husband, they will, of course, kill him. Because that's what Egyptians do, you know, especially in those days. Pharaoh, Paro, and so on, you know. So he tells Sarah, of course, do not say you're my wife, say rather you are my sister. So they'll let him live because, you know, what's the difference, you know? And this is what happens. Now, as a result of all that, of course, they take her and they bring her to Paray. And of course, we know the story where the Rebbeinu Shem appears to Paray and instead of, you know, if you touch her in any way, whatever, you will be severely punished or whatever. And of course, Paray realized that. And he sends her back, of course, to Avraham Avinu. And as a result of that, of course, not only that, but he then gives Avraham Avinu a tremendous amount of wealth, which is interesting. In fact, that's really, in many ways, where Avraham Avinu got, at least it was the starter, tremendous amount of wealth that Parah gave him. What is interesting to think about is that, why did the Rebbeinu Shem do that? First of all, we know that he promised him Eretz Yisrael, and he blessed them, you're going to be wealthy, and a tremendous reputation, and so on. And of course, when he gets to Eretz Yisrael, it's the worst possible scenario. So it's complete violation in terms of what he promised Avraham Avinu, which is really fascinating when you think about that. Now, obviously, there's no such thing as an accident. We're not talking here about, you know, it just happened to be that way. Obviously, it was planned that way. The question we have to ask ourselves is, why would he do that to Avraham Avinu? And it clearly, completely reverse what he said. And Avraham Avinu, you know, what's he going to think? He said, wait a minute, what happened? And so on, you know. But could you imagine what this means? Imagine, he's a 75-year-old man. He's an old guy. That's really what he is. Even then, when they lived longer, still an old person. So the first hardship is for a 70-year-old man to leave his surroundings, what he's familiar with. He's got his family there in Choron and so on, people that he knows. And for him to have to leave a familiar neighborhood where he has support system and so on, it's obviously very difficult. The second difficulty is not only that. The second difficulty is for an older person to travel and move is also very hard. Moving is a very big stressor on most people. You know, it's a really stressful item because it means you go to a place that you're not familiar with. And everybody's always afraid, as I mentioned last week, of change because you can't predict anything. You don't know what's going to happen. There's no stability. Nobody wants to move at that age. You know, if anything, people at that age usually move into a nursing home or something like that. If you think about it, you know. So that's the second very difficult thing for Avraham Avinu. 75 years old, he's going to move. You know, he's an older person. Then where is he going? Most people, they feel, they want to know, of course, where they're headed to, right? The Baruch Hashem never said to Avraham Avinu where he's headed. He said to the Eretz Asher Echo that I will show you, which obviously puts Avraham Avinu in a tremendous quandary because that creates an even greater uncertainty. You don't even know where you're going. So therefore, you don't really know how long the trip will take. It adds tremendously to the stress. So that's another hardship. Then, of course, he gets to Eretz Yisrael, and it's not just a famine. It's one of the greatest famines in world history at that point, and so on. So this obviously is a complete, not only is it a famine, so obviously he can't stay there. So then the whole plan changes. Well, where do I go now? Which is incredibly disruptive in somebody's plans. But besides that, it's a complete contradiction to what the Baruch Hashem said. Right? He said, you can go to a land that's tremendous. And he walks into a land which is completely, everybody's famished, tremendous famine. It's a complete, as I said, contradiction to what the Baruch Hashem said. Imagine. So what does he have to do? So he has to go to Mitzrayim, Egypt. Now Egypt is a tremendously immoral place. You know, tremendously. And to have a person like Avraham Avinu, who's a tremendous tzaddik, he's got to go now to a place of Egypt. Can we imagine what kind of nisoyin that is? You know, imagine if somebody told you, you know, you got to move to Las Vegas, you know, what's called the strip of all the hotels, you know, and so on, you know, and that's where you got to live, you know, for who knows how long. And you're at tzaddik gomor, you know. I don't think you take it too kindly that this is where I have to live, you know. Anyway, so that's another tremendous stressor item. And he gets to Mitzrayim, and of course, he alerts Sarah, you got to say that, which itself is, in many ways, it's an untruth, it's a lie. She's his wife. So he's now in the position where, obviously, it's pekuach nefesh. He's got to say something which is not even true, you know. And she has to act like a sister, not like a wife, which is a tremendous difficulty for a tzaddik like Avraham Avinu. Then what happens? They probably check into a motel. I don't know if they had motels in Egypt, but they check into whatever place people stay. And, if you go to a motel, it's like, you feel like you're lost. You know, you're not connected to anything. It's a tremendously temporary abode in the motel. And then, of course, what happens? His wife is taken away. And she is brought to Paray. So he loses his wife. You see, lest you think that he's going to get her back, right, from Paray. You can't. She will never return to him. Why? Because the consort of a king can no longer get married to a commoner, because the king is so choshev, right? Anybody that he is with can't go back to marry a commoner. Of course not, because she was with the king. So not only has he lost Sarah, he's basically lost her for good. You see? So imagine, and not only that, what's his parnosa? You know, what is his parnosa there in Egypt? He doesn't know anybody, right? He's in the middle of nowhere, has no support system, has no money. His wife was just basically kidnapped. Could you imagine, and he's an old man of 75. Could you imagine him sitting in the motel, right? And saying to himself, what in the world did I get myself into? You know, could you imagine this? Like his whole world has been destroyed. All because he listened to the Rabbeinu Shlom's tzivoy, commandment, to go out. So not only is he the destroyed person with no chance of in any way a resolution, he's finished. Where's he gonna go? He can't go back to Haran. You know what I'm saying? His wife is missing. She's gone for good. He has no money, has nothing. Why did the Moshem do this? It's a good question. It's clearly a setup, you know. And when you think about it, there are several concepts here which are very important. First concept that we have to think about is what he was saying to Avraham Avinu, basically. You see, a person can say, imagine if a king designates you for an official job. You know, you're going to be head of the minister of finances, right? So you figure a minister's job is gewaldig. It's tremendous, right? You get your own chauffeured car, you know, you're prestigious. People invite you to all kinds of parties, right? It's great. It's a great position to be in. It's a position of tremendous wealth, tremendous fame, because it's a very high position, you know. So it's a great thing. So imagine the Rosham appears to you and says to you, I want you to take over the Tikkun, because I'm basically taking it away from the entire creation, all the nations of the world, and I want to give it to you. And you have this unbelievable job to bring me back into the Bria. You see? Now, I imagine Avraham Avinu is listening to that, and he understood, of course, clearly what that means, and it was unbelievable. So one could think, and not only the Bansham is going to say to him, by the way, I'm going to make you tremendously wealthy, tremendous reputation, you know, and you'll have kids, whatever, and so on, you know. And he's probably saying to himself, wow, you know, what an incredible job. This is going to be what's called easy street, as they say. You see? So what the Marshal wanted to tell him, and this is the beginning of our understanding, is that do not think this is what's called a cushy job, you know, where everything's going to be fabulous. This job entails, not all the time, but a lot of the time entails being in a nightmare. That's this kind of job. Don't think that it's going to be gewaldig, as they say. It's going to be great, where everything is going to go perfect. You know? No, not at all. The meaning of this job, basically, is you have to bear whatever it takes to do the tikkun. So essentially, your job in many ways is going to be a nightmare. Therefore, I'm going to introduce you to the nightmare now. You see, not later on, you know, immediately you experience a nightmare. And this is a nightmare of the worst order, because it's real and it's not even a dream. You see, that's a very important wake-up call for Avraham Avinu, that this is not a job that has unbelievable privileges, you know, and special favors and so on. This job is going to entail tremendous amount of difficulty, hardships, and darkness. And that's what the Moshe is telling him. Because one could easily think that, wait a minute, you know, it's great. No. So immediately he was introduced to the nightmare itself. So that's one idea, which is very important. That to be Avraham Avinu, and therefore to be a Jew, you are going to have nightmares. And I don't mean the dream type. I mean the reality type. Because that's what it is to do the tikkun. You know, like the Moshe says, hello, you know, this is what it means to be involved in tikkun. Very important idea. The second thing that you see from this is that the Moshe told him, I want to tell you something. Because it's a nightmare, you need to understand that the critical midah that you need, the most important midah you need, characteristic that you need to sustain yourself, is called bitochen. You have to somehow trust. Now, that as bad as the nightmare is, it's all to help you bring the tikkun, to do the job. And it doesn't make a difference. You see, the most important thing when you think about that, that a Jew has, you know, there are many characteristics, midas, that he has to cultivate. You know, there's chesed, there's kindness, there's mercy, compassion, right? And then there's also, believing in God. But what you begin to understand is that really when you think about it, no matter what happens, you must have bitochen. So you can imagine Avraham Avinu gets to Eretz Yisrael, and it's the exact opposite of what the Ribbono Shel Olam promised him. The exact opposite. So automatically, Avraham Avinu must begin to develop this midah of bitochen, or else he will never make it. So in that sense, the reason why it happened is not only that to do the tikkun means to have nightmarish experiences, but you must develop the midah of bitochen, trust. You need to trust God. In other words, once God says to him, go to the land I will show you, and I'm going to, Agad L'Shemecha, I will raise your name and wealth and so on, you know, then you need to say to yourself, if that's what the Ribbono Shel Olam said, it must be, it has to happen. And anything that seems to contradict that must mean that it's part of the strategy. That's not easy to do. But since that midah is so incredibly important, because you're going to experience terrible times, in many ways, that's the most important midah a Jew has to have, is bitochen. What's the bitochen? That the Ribbono Shel Olam says, you are the one that are going to bring me back. You need to trust that no matter what happens to you, no matter how bad it is, it's part of the strategy. That's what the Ribbono Shel Olam has to, what he did to Avraham Avinu. And just think about that. I mean, if you can picture it, you know. Here's Avraham Avinu, 75 years old, an old man, sitting in a dingy motel, because he probably couldn't afford a very wealthy motel, right? A dingy motel. His wife has just been kidnapped or taken, right? And he can never see her again. Because why would these, you know, power is not going to say, well, you can get together with your sister. He can never be with her because a consort of a king can never go back to a commoner. So his marriage is over. You imagine that? So how in the world can he have kids? You see? He has no money, no reputation, in the middle of nowhere, a foreign country, has no support system. He's finished. So therefore what the Ribbono Shel Olam did is he put him in the worst possible situation, the worst, in order for him to realize that the most important midah that you need to develop is bitochen, trust. You must trust, no matter what the circumstances are, is that this is part of the path, the strategies to do the tikkun. That's two ideas why the Ribbono Shel Olam did it to him. But there's another. There's one more, and in a certain sense, I want to really bring this out. Avraham Avinu, of course, being who he was, he said to himself probably had that bitochen, you know. He said, listen, I have no idea what in the world is going on here. But I do believe in some way it's connected with my mission. It has to be. I have no idea how it's going to turn out. How in the world can I get Sarah back and so on? But what the Baruch Hashem showed him is something very interesting. He said, I want to tell you something, Avraham Avinu, if you think about that. Really, you're finished. You really are finished. And it's by nature, by natural means and orders, right? It's over for you. You know what I'm saying? You're going to be stuck in Egypt. You'll die in Egypt as a lonely man. No kids, no wife, nothing. You know? But with somebody like you, the Baruch Hashem says, I will intercede. And that's really what got him out. Because the Baruch Hashem approached Parai and said, listen, if in any way you touch this woman, you're dead. You and the whole palace and everybody else, and so on, you see? So what the Baruch Hashem told him is, by nature, you cannot survive. Somebody who is involved in tikkun really cannot survive. Why? Because the enemies that you have is unbelievable. You are looking at one of the most greatest forces in the world called the Sultan. And he is against you because he does not want you to complete the tikkun. And then you got all the nisyonis that you have to go through. All the temptations, right? In many ways, you really can't survive. The odds of you coming out of this, right, in one piece is almost zero. So then the question is, then how do you do it? And the answer is, the Baruch Hashem says, I will save you. And he does. He is the one who got Paroi to give Sarah back, right? And so on. And not only that, the amazing thing is that from that experience, right, Paroi made Avraham Avinu a fabulously wealthy man. So the Yeshua came from the Tzoros, which is interesting. And the Baruch Hashem wants Avraham Avinu to know that, that your Tzoros will end because I will end it for you. I will intercede for you. Those are very important lessons for a Jew to learn, especially at the end of time. What Avraham Avinu really was experiencing, which is really very interesting, not just the initial start of the program, as they say, but what the Baruch Hashem was also telling him, by the way, this is exactly what's going to happen in the end. It's going to be a nightmare for the Jews. Before the Mashiach comes, this is the experience that the Jewish people have. They will be in the middle of nowhere, unanchored, without support, right? And all of a sudden, the people that they love will be taken away. They will be killed, you see. It'll be a nightmare for the Jews. Tremendous sorrows, and so on. And however, the Baruch Hashem is saying, in the end, however, the strategy is that you will be saved because I will intercede. No matter how bad it looks, I will intercede. And Adrabah, as they say, on the contrary, you will be not only redeemed, but it's like when the Jews got out of Egypt and Mitzrayim, they all became wealthy because the Baruch Hashem told them, go take from your neighbor all the money that they have and so on, you know? So therefore, what you will see from Avraham Avinu's experience is that in the end of time, this is the climate, the environment of the pre-Messianic age, where it really looks bleak for the Jews. And things, of course, will begin to reverse themselves, which is what they are doing now. But in many ways, you know, you take a look at today's time, you know, the Jews are in exile. So many Jews are leaving Judaism. 11 million Jews are gone, and so on. And even those people who remain with the Yiddishkeit and so on, Judaism and so on, you know, they all have difficulties. There are many different kinds of situations, divorces and sicknesses and poverty and just so many things going on in the Jewish community and so on, you know, that a person can say to himself, this is ridiculous, it's over. How in the world can I ever get out of this? So we have that promise because of Avraham Avinu. As the Ramban says, you know, Maisa Ovis, Simon Abonim. What happened to Avraham Avinu is exactly what happens to us. And just like he was saved because God himself intervened And on the contrary, that's what made him so incredibly wealthy. That's exactly similar bonum. That is exactly what happens to us in the end of time. So that's an important, very important lesson. You know, the story of an Ov, what he goes through, is very important for the Jewish people to learn. Because think about that. How many people would have survived that particular Nisayon that had a whole bunch of complications? It's interesting. There's an Or HaChaim who comments, very interesting, in Parshas Shemos. Well, when Moshe Rabbeinu was speaking to the Bereshitim about the burning bush, the snare. So the Bereshitim says to him, you know, I will tell them that they have to allow my firstborn Israel to leave. And of course he won't. And the Bereshitim calls them my Bechor, my firstborn. And the Bereshitim says to Moshe Rabbeinu, telling him what will happen, I will kill their firstborn. So the Or HaChaim asks, why tell them now? Why tell Moshe Rabbeinu now? This is not going to happen until a year from now. Because the snare basically happened on Tesvav Nisan, which is Pesach. And a year later, you have is when they left Egypt, right? And Makas Becheres was shortly before that. So why does the Baal Shem tell him a Nevuah now of this? You know, he should tell him the Nevuah when time has come. And the idea that he says is very important. Because a person, when he is charged with a mission by the Rebbeinu Shalom, right? What he expects that it's going to happen, you see. But the Rebbeinu Shalom knows it's not going to happen. Think about that. Paroi said to Moshe Rabbeinu, how many times did he say no? Did he say no? Right? 9 plagues until the end, right? And then the first time when he turned the staff into a snake. Paroi said no to him 10 times. So the Or HaChaim says, Moshe Rabbeinu would have happened? He would have got disgusted. So what is this? You know, because what it showed to Moshe is, you know, is the Rosh Hashanah serious about this? You know, how could this happen 10 times that Paroi says no? So could you imagine the disheartening situation and the disappointment that Moshe Rabbeinu? So the Or HaChaim says he would have got disgusted. You know, and who knows? He said, maybe we said, I'm out of here, you know? Because clearly in his mind, it's not happening. In fact, what is interesting, so therefore the Rosh Hashanah told him, right, to avert that. Don't worry, right? He's going to say no. He's telling him, don't be disappointed, you see. He's going to be saying no, and in the end, the last one will be Makas Becheres. So Moshe Rabbeinu knows that this is the situation, it's going to happen like this. So anybody could, even Moshe Rabbeinu, according to Or HaChaim, would have gotten disgusted with the whole business. Now what is interesting is that when Moshe Rabbeinu now went to Egypt after he knew this, right, and all of a sudden he went to Paroi, he did the trick with the staff becoming a snake, you know. Fine, okay. And Paroi said, of course, Paroi said, who is God that I have to listen to him? And so on, you know. What do we find? We find Moshe Rabbeinu running back to the Mishnah, right? And saying, excuse me, you know, what did you send me for? You know, and if you're not going to die, what happened? And why are you sending me? So then the question you have to ask on the Or HaChaim, wait a minute. You just said that he told him Makas Becheres, the slaying of the firstborn, in order that he shouldn't get disgusted and disappointed, right? And meanwhile, we find that he went to Egypt, right? Was said no, and all of a sudden he goes running back to the Mishnah. What happened? Because which is very interesting, is that the Baruch Hashem said, listen, he's going to say no, right? So therefore, what's going to happen? It's going to become stable. The Jews will remain slaves. So what happened when Moshe Rabbeinu went to Egypt, and he said that, it got worse. Much worse. You know? So Moshe Rabbeinu didn't figure that. You know, okay, to remain slaves, that's all. Same position, right? All of a sudden, it gets much worse. I mean, could you imagine you couldn't sleep because you'd have to run around Egypt gathering straw in the middle of the night? This is crazy, you know? But it just shows you, you know, that a person in a nightmare situation, right, can't handle it. He gets disgusted, disappointed, to the extent when he goes back to Bansham and in a certain sense complains that why is the Bansham do this? As if this was capricious, as if it was, as if this has no reason, as if it's not part of the strategy. That shows you what an average person, or even a great person like a tzaddik, like Moshe, because Moshe was an incredible person, you see? So therefore, and then of course, Moshe Rabbeinu, of course, he ultimately learned the lesson why, because the Jews did not have enough merit that they should get out after this amount of time. The Bansham had to enormously intensify the tzaras in order to allow them to have merit to leave Egypt. So that's what Moshe Rabbeinu, he realized that, and so on, you know. But in any case, so therefore, that's what the Bansham is saying to Avraham Avinu, you see, that what's going to come a time is that there's going to be a nightmare for everybody, you see. But in the end, there will be incredible enlightenment and geula. Very important idea to realize, think about the situation of Avraham Avinu, you see. Now, besides that, we have to ask ourselves a question. Why does it have to come so bad before the geula? What is the problem that it has to become a nightmare? That so many people, today we see that there's a tremendous amount of tzaras, difficulty. It's not only that, tragically, it's what Jews themselves cause other Jews, such difficulties. But why does that have to be? It's a very important question. And the answer is because the Baruch Hu wants all Jews in Olam Haba. It's really what he wants. The problem is, there's a big problem. Many of them don't deserve to get Olam Haba. For whatever reason. In fact, where do you really see this? Which I once said, it's a very important medrash, the Yalkut Shemoni, in 499 in Yeshayahu, where the Rav Hashem approaches the Mashiach ben Yosef. He's called Mashiach ben Ephraim and the Yalkut, and so on, you know. I once said this medrash a long time ago, but it illustrates the point as to why it has to become a nightmare at the end. When the Bansham says to Mashiach ben Yosef, okay, in the future, your nation must be killed. The Jews. The Bansham says that, Mashiach ben Yosef, that the Jews are guilty enough that they need what's called clear destruction. Now, what does that mean? It doesn't mean all the Jews, but there are a number of Jews that will not make Olam Haba, because no matter how much suffering I bring on them, it's not enough to clear the table of the Chatoim. That's what he says to Mashiach ben Yosef. So at that point in time, Mashiach ben Yosef says the following, that he will accept, and he does, he will accept on himself all the Isurin that is necessary to get every single Jew into Olam Haba. All the people that live before him, after him, which is astounding. So the Medrash says what happened. That's what he says. I will accept it. So the Medrash says that the Bansham took a yoke of iron yoke and put it on his neck. And the Mashiach ben Yosef bent. And he started screaming. He said, I'm a boss of a dumb. I can't do this. So the Bansham says, yeah, but you said that you're willing. And the Bansham needs the Mashiach ben Yosef to do that, you see. Or else a lot of Klal Yisrael cannot get into Olam Haba. So the Bansham said, I too will accept the suffering in the sense that the Shekhinah will go in Golos. So the Mashiach ben Yosef says, okay, fine. You know, I'm willing to be like the master. If you accept it, where you, the Shekhinah, will go in Golos, in exile, then I will also do that. And therefore, that is the origin of the whole concept of the Yisurin of the Mashiachim, of Mashiach, especially Mashiach ben Yosef, and so on. And that's Oh, so this is basically, this individual, whoever he is, he has accepted a tremendous amount of Yisurin, and because of that, Klal Yisrael can be Zoicha. What we do see from that is very interesting. If you think about that, the Akedah Yitzchak, what was that all about? Why would the Rosham do that to Avraham Avinu? Give him an Isayin, like the Akedah, where you have to go take your son, Yitzchak, put him on top of the altar, and slit his throat. What kind of an Isayin is that, you see? And we can ask ourselves, really, what exactly is the Nisoyin of Avraham Avinu? Well, the first thing you think about is that the Baruch Hashem never requires human sacrifice. So Avraham Avinu is probably saying to himself, where does this come from? The Baruch Hashem doesn't require human sacrifice at all. The second thing which he probably said to himself is that, wait a minute, not only doesn't require human sacrifice, right, but he is the quintessence of compassion, of Rachmanis. How does somebody who was the essence of Rachmanis, compassion, do this to a human being? Not because he deserved it. So that's the second Nisoyin. Third Nisoyin of Avraham Avinu is Avraham Avinu is an unbelievable Bal Chesed, kindness. Do you know what it is to tell a guy whose whole fiber is kindness, right? To tell him, by the way, you see your neighbor, I want you to slit his throat. How does a person with this type of nature, characteristic, even do that? So that's the third Nisayan. Then there's another Nisayan, fourth Nisayan. Because Yitzchak is what? He's a Jew. So essentially he's telling him, by the way, I want you to kill that Jew. Fifth Nisayan. That Jew happens to be his son. How does a father go and kill his son? And the sixth Nisayan is that he is the last Jew, right? He's the last Jew, right? And until he got Yitzchak, it took him 100 years, right? So if you kill Yitzchak, guess what? That's the end of the Jewish people, you see? But all those six Nisayanists clearly bothered Avraham Avinu. But the seventh Nisayan was probably the deal breaker. What was that? Because he says, wait a minute, this doesn't make any sense. Why? Because the Baruch Hashem said, Ki bi Yitzchak yikor l'chozora, the one who will carry on with the mission of Tikkun, right, is Yitzchak, right? And yet the Baruch Hashem wants me to kill him. Well, that is a contradiction in the Vua. That is a contradiction in prophecy. How can the Baruch Hashem say that Yitzchak will be the transmission process, right? And at the same time say, right, go and kill him. Now we know dead people don't carry on missions. So therefore, that's a clear contradiction. That is an impossibility. The Baruch Hashem cannot contradict himself. When he says something, it's emes. So how can one nevuah contradict another nevuah? You see, this is what Avraham Avinu is thinking. Now we know that the Moshe did not contradict himself because he said, V'ha'aleu li'oilo, bring him up as a burnt offering. But the Moshe never said, kill him. Avraham Avinu obviously inferred that obviously then I have to carry out the act and sacrifice him, slaughter him, and so on. But the Moshe never said that. So therefore, in truth, it was never a contradiction. But to Avraham Avinu, who didn't think that way, it was. So Avraham Avinu is facing seven different Nisyonos. What Avraham Avinu say? Look, I have no idea what in the world this can possibly mean. But he had a tremendous bitochim that if the Baruch Hashem says something, and I guarantee you, this is a classic nightmare situation. It's just incredible when you think about that, you know. But he said to himself, if the Baruch Hashem says this, I have to exercise the midah of bitochen, right? Trust that all of this has meaning in the end toward the tikkun, even though it's impossible. It makes no sense whatsoever. And of course, what happened? Of course, a Malach came and stopped Avraham Avinu from cutting or sacrificing Yitzchak. But what's interesting is that he takes a look and he sees this ram, you know, and the ram, the Torah says, Nechaz b'svach, that his horns were wrapped up and entangled in the bush so he couldn't get out. And Rashi says that, what's this ram doing here? That this ram was there for 2,000 years waiting for this Akedah. Imagine whatever that supernatural ram was and so on, you know? So we can ask, like, you know, a ram, like 2,000 years? What's wrong? Bonshem couldn't get a ram to come there right then and there, whatever. And why does it have to say that he was entangled, his horns were entangled? And why a ram? Why not just stop the whole slaughter process, untie Yitzchak, and go home? What does he have to take something else? So the Torah is merames that, because it says, Tachas benoi. Instead of his son, he took the ram and slaughtered the ram. That shows you really that the ram was a substitute for Yitzchak. It wasn't a new korban, which means that Yitzchak really himself had to be slaughtered. That was the real situation. But what the Baruch Shem did is he substituted Yitzchak for the ram. And that's what Tachas benoi. Instead of his son, he did the ram. You see, so that tells you something, that in the end of Yitzchak really should have been slaughtered, except the Baruch Hashem now replaced him with something else. Why is this the last Nisayon? Because the Baruch Hashem is saying to him, by the way, again, the 10th Nisayon is the end of time. In the end of time, your children, Klal Yisrael, will be chayav, obligated to die, clear. Who saves them? Mashiach ben Yosef. From that medrash. So that ram is a metaphor, was a real ram, but that was the symbolism of Mashiach ben Yosef. And it was 2,000 years, because that deal that was made 2,000 years at the beginning of creation with the neshama of the Mashiach ben Yosef. And Yisurin of Mashiach ben Yosef, this also reveals what it is that the horns really represent the intellect of a person. So the horns of this ram are tied up, and the suffering of Mashiach ben Yosef is fundamentally in terms of learning and insights. That's basically what it is, you see. So therefore, that refers to the Mashiach ben Yosef saving the Jewish people. In the end, that's really what the Akedah is all about. And it was at the end, because the Baruch Hashem is telling Avraham Avinu that in the end of time, this is what's going to happen, is that Klal Yisrael will go through the worst nightmare of all. What's the nightmare? And that is that they will suffer terrible, you see. And one of the classic ideas of the Akedah is the Holocaust. The Holocaust was one of the greatest tragedies of Klal Yisrael. It's just incredible what the Holocaust was. And that Holocaust really is Klal Yisrael on top of the altar. It's really what it is. It would seem, therefore, that because of the Yisurin of Mashiach ben Yosef, that it was what it was, which means without his Yisurin, it would have been much greater than the Holocaust. Would have been much greater for Klal Yisrael, much worse, I should say. But because Mashiach ben Yosef has taken on so much suffering, therefore the Holocaust stopped at a certain point, you see. But that last Akedah is Merame, is the end of time, that this is the nightmare that will happen, and Mashiach is going to take on the suffering. What do we see? That this whole concept of the end of time is going to be a nightmare, just like by Avraham Avinu. The same thing by Yitzchak, the Akedah. That in the end of time, Klal Yisrael will go through an incredibly difficult time. The question we have to ask ourselves is why? Why is it, as you approach the end of time, why does it get so bad? And the answer is because the Rebbe Hashem has to activate a certain midah. The object is to get all the Jews in Olam Haba. The problem is, like I say, that so many Jews, many Jews do not deserve to be in Olam Haba. I mean, this is what God's measuring. He, the Baruch Hashem, understands exactly how much a person deserves and doesn't deserve. So what it is that the Baruch Hashem wants to get him in Olam Haba. So therefore, the Baruch Hashem assumes a certain type of midah characteristic, which is called, I've mentioned it many times, the Anhagas HaYichud. The Anhagas HaYichud is the actions that God takes in order to allow you to survive and get you into Olam Haba. The problem is that since, in a certain sense, it is a deviation of din, of justice, because that's how it appears, in order to save the person, right? The problem is that nobody understands how it works. The concept of why does a righteous person suffer and why does a evil person prosper is part of the actions that God needs to take as part of this Hanhaga, a series of actions, which is called Hanhaga Sayichud. And that is why. The problem is that as you approach the end of time, since the Baruch Hashem wants all Jews to be in Olam Haba, he has to resort to this a series of actions called Hanhagas HaYichud, which is a complete mystery of how it works, but in the end, it does its job. But the primary way it works is obviously through suffering. Through suffering, through darkness, you see, where the world looks like it's a topsy-turvy world. Nothing really makes sense. But this Hanhaga is there in order to make sure that all Jews survive. And that is why near the end of time, things get very bad for the Jews. Because the Baruch Hashem has to balance the books. The Holocaust, for instance, was a tremendous period of time that the Baruch Hashem decided that we are approaching the end and I have to balance the books of many, many Jews that really by themselves may not be able to get Olam Haba, right? And that's with the suffering of the Mashiach, let alone without the suffering. So this whole concept of nightmarish tekufa, time, before the Mashiach comes, before the redemption, you see, is in many ways in service of the Hanhagas HaYichud, in the service of this particular series of actions that have to happen to get everybody into Olam Haba. And that is why, since we are facing the end, right? The end means the end of time, when the tikkun has to be complete, right? And there's no more time to make up for it. Later, there's no Gilgulim anymore because it's now over. Therefore, the Baruch Hashem now resorts to what's called Hanhagas HaYichud. He resorts to that particular midah that is the guarantee that all Jews will be in the future world. So therefore, that's very important to think about. And that's one of the ideas by Avraham Avinu, why he had to sit in that motel and think, how in the world did I wind up in this place, in this situation, you see? And that's what the Baruch Hashem is telling him. Because right after that situation, right, Pari made him a tremendously wealthy person. You see, it was from that situation that he was redeemed and became tremendously wealthy and reputation and so on. Because then once they found that, when God speaks to Pari, then Pari said, what in the world did I do? Who is this guy that God himself is telling me, be careful, you know what I'm saying? So he realized, well, Avraham Avinu is an incredible prophet of God and so on. So that really made his reputation, you see. But in any case, this is a very important idea. And to illustrate this and so on, you know, the concept of Hanhagas HaYichud is mysterious. It is a backup system. It is a system that we do not understand why, because it seems to deviate and violate justice. That's what it seems, you know, where righteous people suffer terribly, you see, and evil people tremendously prosper and so on. You know, this is what we see, and we don't understand this. But the Baruch Hashem is now what's called, it's called the cosmic wrap up. It wants to wrap up the whole situation and end it. But he wants to make sure that every Jew is going to get Noilim Habo, you see. And therefore, in many ways, this is an incredible act of chesed that the Baruch Hashem is doing in order to get the Jews into Olam Haba. And that is why, before the end of time, there's a tremendous amount of tzaras for the Jewish people in order for that to happen. We find very interesting that this has to be kept a secret. Why? Because the Satan cannot become aware of what God is doing. Because the last thing the Satan wants is Jews to get into Olam Haba. So if the Satan understood the logic of the Hanhagas HaYichud, then the Baruch Hashem, not that he can't do it, but he would have to defend to the Satan why he wants to do it, or how can he do it. We'd have to defend, because the Baruch Hashem in the end must justify what he does through din, justice. He can't just erase it and violate it. And therefore, it must be a profound secret. In fact, we see that when it said when Rabbi Akiva was dying, and the Romans were killing him. You know, it was actually on Yom Kippur, in Caesarea, Caesarea, and so on. They were killing him, and the Malachim, they were astonished. These are Malachim, and they said Zu Torah v'Zu Schora. That's famous what they said, right? Zu Torah v'Zu Schora. This is Torah. This is the reward of the Torah. And it was incredulous. They had never seen it like that. Rabbi Akiva is responsible for the transmission of the oral law. Without him, who knows what would be. And this is the reward where he's getting his back ripped off by the Romans, you know, for what? For teaching Torah in public. So the Baruch Hashem says to the Malachim, you know, quiet. If you don't stop complaining, I will restore the Bria to his Toyah V'Voyah. So then the question, of course, is what is that? Was the Baruch Hashem flexing his muscles and saying, if you don't stop it, I'm going to kill you all, or I'm going to return the world back to Toyah V'Voyah? The Baruch Hashem doesn't deal with problems like that. But what it really meant is this, is the Baruch Hashem said, that was the answer. That if you keep complaining, I will restore the world. Why? Because the reason why he's dying the way he is, right, is because of the Hanhagas HaYichud. I need his death in that manner in order to save Jewish lives, in order to make sure that the Jews will be redeemed and have Olam Haba. We don't understand how or why. And that's why this is a display of the Hanhagas HaYichud, of that attribute, those actions which will save the Jewish people. That's what it is. Therefore, I cannot tell you why, because if I tell you, then the Satan is going to protest, and according to justice, how do I do this? You know, and I'm going to have to stop the Hanhagas HaYichud. If I do that, then there's no tikkun. And if there's no tikkun, then the world returns to Toyah V'Voyah. You see, so that Hanhaga, that series of actions, must be kept secret. And not only that, is among the greatest mysteries of all, how the Baruch Hashem does that. How does he get everybody into Olam Haba, and so on. So it must be kept secret, and it's a series of actions which we do not understand, and that's what the Baruch Hashem told the Malachim. And therefore, in the end, this is what's happening. We are being subjected to the main Hanhaga is not what's called Hanhagas HaMishpat, which is the action that God takes in terms of justice, you know, which is the righteous prosper and the wicked suffer. That's the actions that God takes in terms of Mishpat, justice. Yichud, where the Baruch Hashem suspends justice in that sense and does these actions, right? These things guarantee a person an Olam Haba. And in the end of time, they are 99% of the acts of God is under the concept of Hanhagas HaYichud. That's why you look around and like you wonder what in the world is going on. You know, evil seems to prosper. And evil just doesn't only mean people who want to kill. No. Evil is people who have no concept of spirituality, of ruchnias. They're not interested. You know, they're after materialism, they're after pleasure. Right? They're after power, they're after what? Glory and reputation and so on, even if they're nice guys. The world is completely a-spiritual, not spiritual. And there's a great deal of the world which is anti-spiritual, which is against. In fact, what a disturbing statistic is that the amount of people who are dropping religion has increased by 9 or 10% in America. Yeah, it's amazing. Religion is on the down. The 10% of the population, it has increased that people are not in any way, they are abandoning religion. Just shows it, so, you know. So therefore, when you do that, what you're really abandoning, of course, spirituality, and you're embracing what? Materialism and power and pleasure and everything else, you know. So evil includes that also. It's not just somebody who is really kills and maims and steals and so on. It's a complete abandonment of the Bansham and the whole concept of spirituality, you see. So therefore, what we realize is that in order for the Bria to have a tikkun, Hanhogas HaYichud is critical at the end of time. And that type of actions of God is mysterious. It is unknown, and we cannot comprehend it at the present time. However, you should know that when Mashiach does come, right, and on the great Yom HaDin, all of this will be explained, even Hanhogas HaYichud, correct. Well, what the Baruch Hashem is going to do is sit down, so to speak, with every Jew and say, let me run your life through the video machine, right? And you're going to see how every single thing that happened to you, literally, okay, had to happen in order to make sure that you will be in Olam Haba. You see? So in the end, it is satisfied. It is revealed and explained, all the tzaras that everybody goes through. And therefore, as a result of that, we now understand Avraham Avinu, you know, that he's in the worst possible situation, because the Baruch Hashem is telling him, by the way, this is not only your initial foray into the mission of Tikkun, this is also what it's going to look like in the end. But in the end, by Avraham Avinu, became wealthy. And everything that the Baruch Hashem promised them happened. That's the same thing. And we are, as I mentioned many times, we are in that kufa. We are in that period of time where we see a tremendous display of the Hanhogas HaYichud. We see the rise of anti-Semitism in the United States, which people can't believe. We see, of course, it's all over the world. We see really, really violent behavior against the Jews. And we see tremendous growth of evil. College campuses. It's just astounding what is going on in today's time. You know, gender relationships. It's unbelievable what's going on. I mean, I can't believe there's a guy running for president who is an outright homosexual. And he's married to a guy. It's just beyond belief. How even anybody can even vote for this? How do you vote for this type of guy? You know, it's beyond belief. I mean, we all know who it is, but that's what he is. And right now, I think he's leading in the polls. Could you imagine what kind of a situation this is? Well, the president of the United States, of course, it'll never happen. Will actually be a fully functioning, you know, homosexual that's married to a guy. You know, whatever that means, it gives a new meaning to the first lady. You know, what is that supposed to mean? Anyway, but that shows you how corrupt America has become, how much it's descended into the abyss of immorality, when this can even happen like this, and so on, you know. But in any case, this basically is what is going on. That's why you see so much tzaras by Jews. And it's not, of course, chance. It is all designed to get a person into Olam Haba. And therefore, everybody has to really take heart and say to himself, you know, I have no idea what the Baruch Hashem is doing. I don't understand it. Makes no sense to me, and so on. But in the end, you have to do what Avraham Avinu did in his motel room in the middle of Egypt, you know. You have to be boteach, say, in some unfathomable way, this is all leading up to the tikkun, and not only that, to my being in Olam Haba for eternity. That's really what it's all about, you know. I just try to illustrate this with different chazal and so on, you know. So, like they say, you just got to hang in there. Okay, thank you.
This is both on a communal and an individual level.
Say that again?
This is on both a communal and an individual
yes.
level?
Yes.
We learned not too long ago that a Russia who is not worthy to get Olam Haba, then he eventually ceases to exist.
That would happen, yeah.
So how does that coincide with Kodesh Baruch Hu's Ratzon that everybody should get Olam Haba?
Because, you know, I pointed out a while back, you know, even Esav is in Olam Haba. There's a whole medrash that, you know, that Esav is in Olam Haba, and he tries to move forward in a higher position, and the Baruch Hu says, where are you going? You know, get back to your other position. The real question is, what's he doing there in the first place? Because the Baruch Hu has many different ways that he can mechaper, he can atone for people, their sins and so on, you know. In some way he pulls it off, you know, we don't really know. Where do we see this? Because what is very important, the Baruch Hu has many roles. He's a rachmim, you know, he's a chanun, he's merciful, he's gracious, he's chesed, he's kind. But there's an interesting role here, you know, he's also a judge. And a judge has to issue the judgment, you know, and that's it. There's no obligation on a judge to rehabilitate at all. But the Baruch Hu says, Ani Hashem Refecha, I am God, your healer. What that means is the Rebbe Shem reveals that he has a role as a rehabilitator. What is rehabilitation? Where you crashed, so to speak, you know. You're sick and you're dying and this. And along comes a doctor and he tries to heal you, which means get you back to where you were when you were healthy. That's the concept of rehabilitation. When the Rebbe Shem revealed to Klal Yisrael, and by Egypt, you know, that I am God, your healer. What he revealed, which is an incredible thing, you know, I think it's one of the most important things that a person has to understand and make him happy, is in the end, the Baruch Hu says, I am a rehabilitator. I am a doctor. I'm going to remedy you. That's incredible. Because justice doesn't demand rehabilitation, you know. And the question, rehabilitation to what? And the answer is Gan Eden, and ultimately Olam Haba. So that should give, in a certain sense, everybody peace of mind, you know, that the Baruch Hu has declared that he is going to rehabilitate you, you know, and the Baruch Hu knows how to rehabilitate everybody, you know. He's not limited by, you know, the latest findings in rehabilitation science and so on, you know. That's an unbelievable statement that the Rebbe Shem made. You know, that means in the end of time, a person, no matter what he goes through, he has to say, this is all for rehabilitation. All of this. Even though I don't understand. But somehow all this sorrows, all these nightmares, this is what I need to be rehabilitated. Thank God. You know, I don't understand, but someday it will be explained, you know. So because of that midah, that role of rehabilitation, even though justice-wise the guy's finished, because there's two roles here. Justice, which means, hey, you don't deserve it. And okay, I'm not going to do something that has nothing to do with justice. Rehabilitation has nothing to do with justice. It comes from the concept of chesed and ahava, love and kindness. And because of those two midas that God has, all Jewish people will be rehabilitated.
So that we find Rosh HaVetoivloi, Olam Haza, right?
Rosh HaVetoivloi,
so
yeah.
He gets his schar in Olam Haza so that he should, Kodesh Baruch Hu should be able to give him his Einish in Olam Haba. That's just to bring him into the rehabilitation phase?
No, there are people, rehabilitation will not happen to everybody. Primarily it happens to the Jewish people. it will probably also happen to non-Jew, goyim, you know, Gentiles and so on, you
Jewish
know.
Jewish people? So are there the Jews that won't be zeicha to rehabilitation?
No, everybody will be zeicha to rehabilitation. Yeah. It's interesting, the Ramchal says in the Derech Hashem that there's a miyuta de miyuta, a minority of a minority of Jews, apparently that will not be rehabilitated. You know, which he does, but the Baal Shem says, no, everybody will. I imagine the reason why, because you have to remember, you know, some people are so evil, they have killed so many people, that, you know, God says, I can't rehabilitate you. They've stumped God, in that sense. I mean, it's pretty hard to do that, when you think about that, since God is omnipotent and so on, you know. But there are some people, I mean, it really takes a lot of evil to get yourself out of that. But there are some people that are so bad, you know, that they've done horrendous jobs. They're responsible for thousands and thousands of Jews being killed. I mean, how do you machaper for that? Can you rehabilitate, although Hitler, Yimach Shemai, is not Jewish, but could you imagine if Hitler was Jewish? You know, and there were people of that, not that caliber, you know, who were in that position, who killed thousands and thousands of Jews. How do you rehabilitate a guy like that? You know what I'm saying? I don't know. I imagine, you know, this is a real challenge even for God to do that, you know. But to whatever, and he knows, you know, how far down you have to go that you're out of the rehabilitation process. He knows that, you know. But generally speaking, probably 99.99 people will be rehabilitated. And for those other people who won't, the evil that they have committed has to be so just incredibly large that the Banshim has decided that they are so far corrupted that they cannot be rehabilitated.
So why is Russia the Tovlai? If he's going to get rehabilitated in the end, let him put away his schusim in his savings account for post-rehabilitation.
Russia of a toiv loy.
The oilam hazeh. He gets his schar in oilam hazeh. Right, why? I mean, he's going to be rehabilitated like everybody else.
You know, you have to remember, you know, there's what's called, like for instance, it says in Sanhedrin, the following people will not get oilam haba. You know? Rabban ben Nevat, there's a whole bunch of them, right? Does that really mean they won't get Olam Haba? What it probably means is that they will get Olam Haba. So what does the Gemara mean, or the Mishnah, or whatever, is that judgment or justice says they should not get Olam Haba, you see? But the Baruch Shem can say, okay, means the Fi Hadin, according to judgment, justice, they do not deserve Olam Haba. But then there's a whole other role or a whole other department called the rehabilitation department that somehow can alter justice. In other words, it works through justice, you know, but there's no obligation to do it, you see. So Barsham could bring this person back in a Gilgal where he's going to suffer from the day he was born to the day he dies. You can do that, Barsham. And unfortunately, there are people like that, you see. Now, justice doesn't demand that this guy be reborn again and suffer so extensively, not at all. You know, hey, you lost your Olam Haba, you're out of here, finished, you know. But the rehabilitation department, so to speak, says I could bring him back as a Gilgal and make him suffer for 80 years, you know, which is incredible. I mean, some people need that, you know, 80 years, you know, a terrible life. Some people have terrible lives. You know, and so on, you know, because I'm now moving into him or her into a different department called rehabilitation. So rehabilitation is really works, it's outside in a certain sense of justice, but it's only because the Baruch Shem said he's a roife that he will do that. So there's judgment, justice, and then there's the rehabilitation department, you know. So that rush of a toivloi, the Bansham, in a certain sense, decides, you know, which people, which Rishoyim he will do that to, you know. Most of them, even the Rishoyim, he will rehabilitate, you know. that the Tov Loi, but there's also, I spoke about this when I gave the whole Shindar Hashem, there's certain people who survive to Olam Haba, but what God does is he diminishes their Olam Haba. Remember I spoke about that? Yeah. So that Rasha V'Tov Loi, in other words, it's a Rasha, and he gets good, right? Because he, even though he does get, part of him rehabilitates, but also part of him does not deserve that type of Olam Haba. So the Bansham gives him the reward here, and he does not get the Olam Haba that he could have gotten, even Al Yedei Din. Because he obviously, because the judgment is that he doesn't deserve that type of Olam Haba, but he gets it. So that Tov Loi will reduce his Olam Haba. You know, this guy all of a sudden goes in the market, becomes a billionaire. You know what I'm saying? That can slice 3/4 of his Olam Haba away, even though he still gets Olam Haba. You see? So, you know, there are all kinds of different angles on this, you know, but that's basically how it would work, you know. So like I say, even the Tov Loi, even the evil people that prosper and so on and so forth, like I say, there's always a cheshbon. But it could mean still that they are rehabilitated to get into Olam Haba. You know, the main thing, by the way, just get into Olam Haba. Get into the future world, because the lowest rung of the future world is infinitely greater than this world. You know what I'm saying?
Bucharebbe.
Who?
Bucharebbe.
Bucharebbe? What's that?
Bucharebbe. The story. This small piece, this is what he...
Wow, okay, I'm not familiar. But anyway, you see, so this rehabilitation doesn't mean you're going to get a fabulous Olam Haba. Doesn't mean that, you know. It'll get you into Olam Haba, you see. And once you're into Olam Haba, then that's, yeah, even that's incredible, you know. But, you know, rehabilitation doesn't mean that the Baruch Hashem is going to give you an Olam Haba like Moshe Rabbeinu. That's not what the rehabilitation is. It's to get you into Olam Haba, you know. And like I say, even the smallest thing of Olam Haba is infinitely greater than this entire world, you know. So it's all measured out exactly and so on, you know, how it works and so on.
What about Goyim?
A Goyim, also, depending on who the Goy is, non-Jew, who he is, what he thinks, you know, I mean, obviously there are people like, you know, who are non-Jews that, no way, you know, but there are, you know, there are many non-Jews that are spiritual, you know, and they do deserve Olam Haba, so they will get Olam Haba, yeah.
For real, but in terms of Hashem going out of his way, so to speak, to rehabilitate them?
I believe yes, yeah. Depends on the acts of the person, but there are many non-Jews who are in a certain way righteous. You know, and they can be rehabilitated.
I imagine the dynamics changed because the baseline, this is Kol Yisrael Yishlem Chelek Olam Haba, is the baseline for a Jew.
Yes.
But for a guy, he has to reach that first, has to somehow achieve that first. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, he has to, yeah, yeah.
He doesn't have that baseline.
But he doesn't have that baseline.
I believe in the Rosh.
What's that?
Has to believe in the Rebbeinu Shlomo.
Yeah, many of them
how
do.
How many people believe in the Rebbeinu Shlomo?
No, a lot of them do. I mean, look, there are a billion people on the planet.
What does it mean?
7.5 billion. What?
If they believe in Yashka, it's not believing in the Rebbeinu Shlomo.
Yeah, but you have to remember, there are many, most of them are Anusim. They are Anus. Well, you know what? Was a guy who, most people don't think about religion and so on, you know. They're taught by their parents and the schools and their friends. They're incredibly influenced by everything else. How many people can sit down really and say to them and say, well, is there a God or not? Let me now bring the proofs. You know, they don't know. You know, I mean, what may seem to obvious to you.
Is that something innate, that a person is given these qualities, the ability to recognize that there's a creator?
Yes, but you have to be open to that. You see, you have to be open to thinking that way. Most people are biased. You know, look, Aristotle.
Isn't they getting a free ride?
Aristotle believed in a creator, but that creator had nothing to do with God. I mean, he believed in a creator, you know, that started the universe off, but he does not intervene in the affairs of man. Does Aristotle get Olam Haba? I mean, look at a man with that kind of intellect. Even he missed the point. You see, you know, all of this needs unbelievable acumen to figure out what to do with the guy. You know, life is a very, very complicated situation. You know, and so like I say, you know, many people are they are earnest. They are compelled. There's especially when you live in a world that is evil and corrupt and incompetent and immoral and so on and so forth.
Brainwashed.
What chance does a guy have? You really think about that, you know?
Also, we know already that a guy doesn't have necessarily, I don't know if he doesn't have the same concept, he can believe in a shutfist, for example.
Yeah.
So what they need to believe in is not necessarily the same thing that Jew needs to believe in terms of whatever the details of that are.
Yeah. Look, it's a very complicated situation, but ultimately speaking, the Baruch Hashem decides, you know, what is your fault and what is not your fault. To what extent is it not your fault? And so on. You know, he knows exactly, you know, the true situation of every human being alive. And he takes everything into account. Look, the Baruch Hashem is not... Look, you know, in the end, the Baruch Hashem loves mankind, even Goyim. His Ava, of course, he loves the Jews. Why? Because they bring him back. I mean, that he swore that he's going to bring us back. He's going to come back. So his emphasis in terms of Ava are for Jews. But really, the Baruch Hashem has feelings, if you want to use that word, for all mankind. We see that by the Yam Suf. When they were drowning, the Malachim started singing Shira. They started singing praise song to God because he was killing the Egyptians. And believe me, these guys were bad people. They were out to kill the Jews, you know, and they've been doing terrible things to the Jews for hundreds of years. It was ridiculous, you know. And even then, the Baruch Hashem said, you know, Maisi Yodai, these are the work of my hand, and you're singing, I'm destroying the work of my hand, you know, and you're singing Shira, which tells us clearly that the Baruch Hashem has compassion, or has feelings, if you want to use the word, which of course he doesn't, but to all his creations. That's what a creator is, and so on. And what they deserved, they got. And, you know, it was incredible what he did to them, you know. But he does have compassion. He has Rachmanis to Goyim. It doesn't make a difference. They're his handiwork, you know. Of course, remember I said, just because somebody gets Olam Haba doesn't mean they get a great Olam Haba. You know, that's a long stretch, you know, in terms of that, you know. But the idea is that the Ribbono Shel Olam, even though he practices justice, has the second role where he will rehabilitate and help somebody get into Olam Haba. Look, the Anogas HaYichud, the backup system, is refuah, is the rehabilitation. Think about that, you know. That's how you rehabilitate. You know, and so on, you know. But look, if anybody, at least in a minimum sense, is good, whatever that means, honest and so on and so forth, you know, and basically, as they say, he's a basic human being, basic dignity and so on and so forth, you know, he'll get Olam Haba. What type of Olam Haba is a different story, you know. And look, God is fair to everybody. He's not fair only to Jews and unfair to Goyim. Not at all. He's fair to everybody. Because that's what he is. He's God. And these are all his handiwork, you know. So on.
The Ramchal says in the Asturas, in the Derech Hashem, that Mitrecha Choshech, the reason it has to be such a death of Choshech is because that's how it's Nizgala the Orad.
Yeah. Yeah, that's another reason, so, which I once went into. I focused on this one.
What happened with the Choshech from 2,000 years ago, or 1,000 years ago, or 500 years ago, right? It was already, that Choshech was already forgotten. Where's the Giloy? What's the Tziruf? You know, we live in today's Tzara. We know what the problems are today.
Yeah,
so we say,
yeah.
Well, from that Choshech, it's terrible. You know, it'll be, when Kodesh Baruch will be Megal himself to the world, then people will realize.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of Choshech in the world.
Yes.
To date.
The world or in the Jewish people?
In the history of the world. The
oh,
Jewish
yeah.
people, the world. Right?
Yeah. The history of mankind is basically a history of the wars of mankind.
But yet the payoff hasn't come. So
what payoff do you mean?
the Giloy wasn't yet...
Because the Jews haven't done the Tikkun yet. It hasn't reached the measure where God said, everything has been done, now I can come back. So therefore all this has to continue, you know?
So it's really not Choshech alone, it's the...
Oh yeah, it's light, of course. Yeah, there's awe. Jews constantly bring down enormous amount of spiritual light. Sure, you know. It's a very complicated process, obviously, that has almost an infinite amount of different details. We could know, like the Ramchal says, we have no concept of the details of the tikkun, the kilkul, you know, the damage that people do by their sins, and so on. I mean, how do you regulate 7.5 billion people? Every split second is regulated by these people. You know, it's astounding how a mind can capture all that. And it's not only the 7.5 billion people, whatever, and all the Jews and the non-Jews, it's also all the Gilgulim. You know, I can go through a 400 Gilgulim. How do you know and regulate every single Gilgul that a person ever went through and know all his acts? And what the weight, the value of each act is, and then intersperse that with somebody else, it's like incredible. You know that, I bring many times this example, imagine a plane goes down, right? You know, a plane goes down and, 250 people die, right? That's incredible. I mean, nobody dies for nothing. That means that the 250 people that died in that plane, at that time, and in this situation, all were condemned to death in heaven, or else they wouldn't have died. If one guy didn't deserve to die, the whole plane would have been saved. The question is, how in the world did God get everybody to be on that plane that had the exact same judgment of one and how they have to die? That's like, huh? How did he do it? You know how complicated that is to orchestrate this? You make sure everybody's got his reason why he's got to be on that plane, you know? I mean, how do you do it? And we're talking about a plane that can pick up people from all over the world. You know, there's Canadians and Americans and Africans. They're all on that plane, each one for a different reason that has something to do with their life at that moment, right? Wow. It's infinite. Keep cheshbon, you know? To keep this reckoning, it's just beyond belief. Our understanding pales in terms of what really goes on. It's an infinite. Only the mind of God, even a supercomputer can't do this. How do you do something like that? You know, you have to know exactly what's going on in each one's lives, what they're guilty of, how many reincarnations they went through. Do they have this judgment? How many sins? And it was a really a sin? Was it not a sin? And how many mitigating circumstances? You know? And then not only that, a guy can be on that plane, you know, but really the guy's married and his wife doesn't deserve that. Her husband died. So he won't die because his wife doesn't deserve that. And you know what I'm saying? And maybe if he does die, he's going to leave over 4 kids and they don't deserve to have a father that's missing. I mean, how do you calculate all this? You know, so that means God has to arrange where the guy got off the plane, which he does. Remember how many times a guy misses the plane? Or for some reason the guy had to get off the plane and then guess what? The plane land crashed, right? Because for some reason, all of a sudden, somebody came up, an angel came up and said, wait a minute, wait! And they had to do this in a split second because they couldn't stop the plane. We don't know what's going on up there. It's infinite. The ability to calculate all this and coordinate of this is just infinite, you know. But somehow, in the end, it works, you know. Anyway, we're in that situation. We are really, in many ways, at the end of time. That's why there's so many human tragedies and sicknesses and divorces, bankruptcies and so on, you know. In the entire world, you know. What is happening? Look, that guy they just took out. What's his name? Soleimani. You know? It's amazing. Rishoyim. God decides, okay, you can survive until this moment. And the exact second that his life had to be terminated, you know, it was terminated. He didn't live 1 second more than he could have lived. God took him out in a snuff. finished, you know. They don't realize, and God has all of this in account. When everybody's got to go, when they come in, out, and so on, how many children are born, right? And it's just beyond human comprehension how God figures all this out, and so on. But in the end, like I say, you know, we focus on the midah. There is rehabilitation. Thank God for that. So in the end, you know, you're going to make it. That's a nice thought, I'm sure, you know. And that's it, you know. May take a little treading water and plodding through the water and all that, but it'll happen, so, you know. And we're coming, really. What you're doing is you're seeing such an acceleration of world events that you realize that redemption is accelerating. Today, every day in the news, there's something going on that's, you know, that's wakes up everybody and so on. We're very close to the end. Very close to the end, you know. Anyway, between America, Iran, and Israel, like I pointed out last time, we're very close to the end. And there's going to be big shakeups coming down the road. Okay, thank you.